Jerry Bader Show, 1036. Jason, last call on this because I do need to get to a bunch of things. Talking about what's going on college campuses where they are trying to silence opposing viewpoints and succeeding at the moment. Wall Street Journal's David Henninger says this is going to change because parents are going to stop spending money there. I don't think so anytime soon. I think it's too ingrained, and I think it would have to change at the high school level, where guidance counselors would have to just not default send you there further, as several callers have pointed out. Alternative colleges aren't all that better necessarily because a lot of their professors, instructors, are products of the institutions that are the problem. David in Green Bay. David, go ahead. David? David said he would hang on. Now Jason's going to find you and pummel you about the fate. No, he's not. No, you're not. No, you're not. Maybe not. All right. Want to get to a few things quickly and then spend more time on another. Wisconsin's unemployment rate falls to 5.8%. Most of the state is rejoicing, except for Mary Burke and her supporters. According to the Department of Workforce Development, the unemployment rate fell to 5.8%, the lowest rate since the recession hit, October 2008. The U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics unemployment and employment estimates show Wisconsin's preliminary unemployment rate dropped a tenth of a percent to 5.8% in April from 5.9% in March, and the state gained an estimated 7,600 private sector jobs. Also today, yesterday actually, the DWD released the latest available Wisconsin actual job counts based on reports from nearly 160,000 Wisconsin employers. The data covering the fourth quarter of 2013 shows Wisconsin added 28,000 private sector jobs during the 12-month period ending in December 2013, and private sector wages increased by 2.2% during the fourth quarter of 2013 compared same quarter 2012. The economic picture in Wisconsin, writes Right Wisconsin, continues to improve, to which you can hear liberals saying, damn it, because that, of course, reality is just not good news for them. I have not taken up the topic for years of animal rights groups who go after circuses. There was a major victory in court, actually a settlement reached between animal rights groups and the producers of the Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey Circus, serves as a cautionary tale about the consequences of making an allegation in federal court that you have trouble backing up. The Humane Society of the United States and other animal rights groups have paid Feld Entertainment a combined $15.75 million to settle allegations by the company that the groups and their lawyers bribed a former circus employee to make up allegations that Feld abused Asian elephants in its circus. They paid the guy $200,000 to say what he said. Feld brought the case after it emerged that they had paid close to $200,000 to Tom Ryder, a former elephant cleaner and feeder who claimed the company had abused its elephants in violation of the Endangered Species Act. They, of course, claim, well, we would have prevailed in court, but this all crapola. They made these allegations up. They made up these lies. I guess all lies are made up, huh? They made up this abuse. And when there's the circus here in Green Bay, you have this goofy protesters all the time. I'm not saying that you don't have to be careful that animals aren't abused, but this was just a lie. And those of you who buy into this crap, no, really, they just paid $15 million to make this go away. $15 million. Next, Mary Burke has tried to be as noncommittal as she possibly can about Act 10 and how far she would go in undoing it. As both the Wisconsin State Journal and Colin Roth report at the Roth Report at Right Wisconsin, as Colin puts it, Mary Burke shakes her blue fist. This is big. Democratic candidate for governor Mary Burke finally took a firm, concrete position on Act 10 Thursday night at a meeting of the Madison School Board, of course, which she's a member, when she joined fellow board members in voting, listen to this now, voting to direct the superintendent to enter into negotiations with bargaining units with the intent of reaching a labor contract, thus violating Act 10. The Wisconsin State Journal reports, I'm very happy to report that the board voted unanimously to direct our superintendent to begin good faith collective bargaining with all of our district's represented units, said MMSD School Board President Arlene Silvera. Silvera said that the bargaining is for the purpose of negotiating a successor agreement, meaning the board would like to see some changes addressed in the contracts of Madison Teachers, Inc., one of the few teachers' union in Wisconsin that still have a bargain contract. She wouldn't say what those specific changes are, calling them part of the board's bargaining strategy, still up for discussion. We're really excited because we do believe in collective bargaining, and we look forward to sitting down at the table, which is specifically banned by Act 10. Now, it appears what they're hoping for is that the courts will ultimately strike down Act 10. I wouldn't get too excited about that. Not at all. So now we know where she's at. She voted to openly, while in closed session, she voted to violate Act 10. She can't run from this all the way till November. It's not going to happen. She's going to have to say, yes, if a repeal of Act 10 was put on my desk as governor, oh, what a scary thought. I would sign it. This has put her in a tough spot. You know what? I will give her kind of some backhanded credit. I'm surprised she didn't abstain. I really am. I'm surprised she didn't skip the meeting because we all knew this was coming. I'm really surprised. I thought she would have found a way not to vote on this. But she did. And it likely will become part of the campaign. Another education issue. A lot of education stuff today. We haven't talked about Common Core in a while. I have two things on Common Core. George Will was on Tuesday's special report with Brett Baer on Fox News. They were debating Common Core. Peggy Noonan reports that earlier in the broadcast, Michelle Rhee, hero of education reform, was invited on to make the case for Common Core. She reverted to the gobbledygook language that educators too often use and failed to make a persuasive case that the core is good for public school students and will help them and our country in the long run. Then George Will came on. He was debating with Juan Williams, who supports Common Core. Listen to Juan Williams and then listen to George Will's response, because this is a slice of awesome.
And I don't think it's out of place for our governors, for our school leaders, local school leaders, to say, here are the common standards at which we want them to achieve. The military is on board, Chamber of Commerce is on board. It's hard, even the Condoleezza Rice and the Council of Foreign Affairs on board.
They're all wrong, and here's why. The advocates of the Common Core say, if you like local control of your schools, you can keep it, period. If you like your local curriculum, you can keep it, period. And people don't believe them for very good reasons. This is a thin end of an enormous wedge of federal power that will be wielded for the constant progressive purpose of concentrating power in Washington so that it can impose continental solutions to problems nationwide. You say it's voluntary. It has been driven by the use of bribes and coercion in the form of waivers from No Child Left Behind or race to the top money to buy the compliance of these 45 states, two of which, Indiana and I believe Oklahoma, have already backed out, and they will not be the last. Watch the verb align in this argument. They're going to align the SAT and ACT tests with the curriculum. They're going to align the textbooks with the tests. And sooner or later, you inevitably have a national curriculum that disregards the creativity of federalism. What are the chances, Juan, that we're going to have five or six creative governors experimenting with different curricula, or one creative, constant, permanent Washington bureaucracy overlooking our education? We've had 50 years now of the Elementary and Education, Secondary Education Act, 50 years of federal involvement that has coincided with stagnation in test scores across the country.
Peggy, by the way, that was just absolutely brilliant. Peggy Noonan then picks up on that in her blog in the Wall Street Journal. The educationalists wanted to impose, they don't like that word, they prefer offer or suggest, more rigorous and realistic standards and establish higher expectations as to what children can be expected to have learned by the time they leave the public schools. They seem to have thought they could wave a magic wand and make that happen. But life isn't lived in some abstract universe. It's lived on the ground, in this case with harried parents trying to the degree they can or are willing to help the kids with homework and study for tests. The test questions that have come out of are nonsensical and impenetrable, promise to get worse, and for those reasons are demoralizing. And we've all seen those math questions online. Louis C.K. was right. Late Show with David Letterman, when he spoofed the math problems offered on his daughter's test. Bill has three goldfish. He buys two more. How many dogs live in London? That's about it, if you haven't seen that stuff online. The people who developed and created Common Core need to look now at themselves. Who is responsible for the nonsensical test questions? Who oversees the test makers? Do the questions themselves reflect the guidance given to teachers, i.e., was the teaching itself nonsensical? How was implementation of the overall scheme supposed to work? Who decided the way to take on the critics was to denigrate parents who supposedly don't want their little darlings to be revealed as non-geniuses, and children who supposedly don't want to learn anything? Who among these serious people chose sarcasm as strategy? Who decided the high-class pushback against the pushback should be defensive and dismissive? Did anyone bother to get actual parents in on the planning and development? Were women there? And mothers? Maybe parents with kids in the public school system? Who even picked the ugly name Common Core? Sounds common, except to the extent which it sounds Soviet. Maybe it was the people who dreamed up the phrase Homeland Security. The irony is that core proponents' overall objective, to get schools teaching more necessary and important things and to encourage intellectual coherence in what is taught, is not bad but good. Why they thought the answer was federal, I mean national, and not local, is beyond me. Since patronizing people you disagree with is all the rage, I'll have a go. The Common Core establishment appears to be largely led by people who are well-educated, well-meaning, accomplished, and affluent, and who earnestly desire to help those in less fortunate circumstances, but who simply don't know enough about normal people, how they live, how they think, to have made a success of it. Also, they don't seem to know what that intelligent Americans, exactly the kind who quickly become aware of and respond to new federal schemes, sorry, I meant national ones, have become very, very wary of Washington and the dreams of its eggheads. How they could have missed that is also beyond me. A combination of George Will and Peggy Noonan slaying Common Core, and the comparison to Obamacare by Will and others is spot on. Spot on. Well, it didn't quite work out the way we planned. Really? Who saw that coming? It's 10:50.
Facebook fan page. Go to jerrybatershow.com.